Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to the Defrag Show. We are back. It's been a while.
2017?
Yeah. Welcome to the new year.
Mm-hmm. It's starting off with a bang, eh?
A little bit, yeah. Well, mine started off with a bang. I did a little bit of bootleg fireworks for... Well, I didn't. Someone did. No, I did it. But yeah, it was an awesome New Year's Eve. Great holiday. We were in Germany. We were shooting an MVP show there, so that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
My sleep schedule is still screwed up. I've got the Thomas Edison sleep schedule now, so I'm just like sleeping a couple hours here, a couple hours there. Very tired right now, but we'll be all right. And were you off for the holiday, or were you working?
I was working.
Yeah. Andrew Richards said the same. A little busy over there. But.
I find that vacations, one, I'm very terrible at vacations.
Yeah.
I've always been terrible at vacations. But I find that taking a vacation and then coming back, the transitions are mm-hmm. really, really hard. Because, you know, people will come back and they have a whole bunch of stuff that they have to do. And it takes them another week in order to get back into things. So did they lose? They were gone for 2 weeks plus a week. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't tend to like to do that. So it's like, if I'm always just working, then I don't have to transition.
Yeah. I saw Larry Osterman said he came back from vacation, had 2,600 emails. So there's that too. You have to dig out. So there's a little bit of debt from taking time off. Did you see the new Star Wars movie?
I did not see the new Star Wars movie. Did you like it?
I loved it. Yeah, I saw it twice. Very cool. We watched a whole marathon leading up to it, and it's getting to be a lot of movies for that. But awesome.
With two young kids, my movie watching days are pretty much non-existent.
Yeah. Watch the I think I like probably the Force Awakens a little bit better.
Oh, interesting.
And watch it again last night. I'm just having to see that again, but. I noticed something last night. I learned from Finn that if the stormtroopers would only take off their helmets, they would be able to hit everything they shoot at. So there's that. Apparently, it's the helmet that keeps them from hitting anything. So, yeah. And I also had a Rick and Morty marathon. So watched the entire two seasons of that. It's my favorite show now. You haven't seen it?
I have never seen Rick and Morty.
You should.
I watch very little TV.
Yeah.
There's very few shows that I ever get a chance to watch.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I like Elementary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the police procedural shows. But I just don't get a chance to watch a lot of TV. Right now, any free time
mm-hmm.
that I get to spend is basically coding on some Arduinos and, you know, just kind of going back to my childhood on, I used to build just various different contraptions of, you know, oh, this is kind of cool. Let me just go build something in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've built up this list over the years of things that I want to have around the house, things that can, you know, make life a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And like one of the things that I'm building right now is a Skyping doorbell.
Oh yeah, nice.
Right?
So nice. I installed Ring, I love it.
I've seen Ring. I've used Ring, but I wanted to do something, you know, a little bit more custom.
Mm-hmm.
I had extra hardware lying around the house,
yep.
and I wanted to try and do something with an Arduino and video conferencing. And it's like, so if somebody
button for a trap door, get rid of people.
They've like NFC scanners. They're like, can I use my badge to get into the house? Kind of thing.
Yep.
Like, as it sounds like right now, I've got a keypad for my door lock. So I don't know haven't used a key in forever.
I haven't had a key in 20 years. So it's ridiculous.
I mean, why would you want to carry that around?
Yeah.
But you know, I've just been trying to figure out like, what are those cool things? I've been asking my wife and, you know, it's like, what if you had this? You know, what is something that is a time saver? What can mm-hmm. I build for you?
Yeah.
So just trying to design some of these things out.
Good husband. Yeah. Couple things I was going to point out here. We got a couple new things here in the studio. The Intel Compute Stick. So we got
this
two of these.
This is so cool.
Yeah, this is awesome. So we got this because when we were in Germany, we were doing a live broadcast, and we have these, you know, the rear screens here.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if someone's not using a laptop to present, You just want to have a JPEG or something on the back, and we'll use like a PowerPoint deck or something. But we have to carry around an extra laptop to do that. So I got a couple of these. So we'll just throw these on the screen. It's like a big thumb drive, but plugs in the HDMI port. So
this one is USB 3. It is powered by a USB-C power source. Micro SD card, this particular one has vPro, so it supports virtualization and TPM.
Doing an unboxing here.
Yeah,
this is the other one we got.
Miniature unboxing.
The cool thing with this, too, is the power supply, at least on the other one, I don't know if it's on that, it had two other USB ports on it. So
this,
I guess this one doesn't.
This particular power supply does not, but it is a global power supply, which is very, very handy. For all your traveling. HDMI dongle, you know, a little bit separate.
Yeah, because sometimes it doesn't fit in the HDMI port.
You know, nice boxes, pretty good specs. This is an M5 read, saw this data sheet. This is an M5 with 64 gig of RAM. So
that's got a micro SD card slot on it too. You can get a 256, put that in there and you're good.
I mean, this with a Bluetooth keyboard, right, is really all that you need to carry with you. Or even better, if all you're doing is projecting, or you know, you have a JPEG on here, you could always set it up with, because I've got one of these compute sticks as well. I put on the PC remote software. And I use my phone as a virtual mouse and keyboard. So that's super handy, right? You just pop this puppy in, it starts up an automatic service, ad hoc Wi-Fi connection, or you know, with a real router connection, infrastructure connection. You hook up your phone to it and do whatever it is that you need. You can do mirror cast to this thing. Or wide eye, you know, whatever it is you want to call it. So these compute sticks are super handy, being able to take it with you, plug it into not just a monitor, you know, you plug it into, go to the library, use their computer, use their facilities.
I mean, it really could be your main computer.
Absolutely.
As long as you don't need a screen or you have screens wherever it is you're going.
Which I mean,
they're every TV.
Like, this is the thing, you use it in a hotel, right? You have all of your documents, it's TPM protected. I mean, on a plane, no, not so useful. But, you know, this one might actually have more horsepower, because if you had, say, just a tablet, you know, for consumption, you might just have that in this, but this would have potentially more power than a tablet. Unless, of course, it's a Surface Pro 4.
And then the other thing that I got was the Bose Quiet Comfort 20 headphones, which Golnaz was on me about, you know, you gotta get these. I was like, oh, I like my earbuds that I have. I had some nice, you know, pretty high-end earbuds. She's like, no, you gotta try these. And so I got a set, and it's pretty unbelievable, because it will, like, you put them on, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, they're kind of comfortable and everything. And when you turn them on, it's like, oh my gosh, it's just, I went
noise canceling.
Yeah, it's like you're completely deaf when you turn it on. So very cool. It's almost a little bit disorienting because when I take them off after using them, it's like I don't want to be in this world. My hearing is, I'm hearing all kinds of mess and I don't like it. And I wore them yesterday while I was working, just not even plugged into anything, just to not hear, you know, people in other offices and stuff like that. So yeah, it was pretty cool. And the other thing is kind of disorienting is if I have just one on in a phone call. It's weird because I have one ear that's like completely locked out from anything, and the other ear is living in the real world. So that's kind of weird.
Split personality.
Cool. All right. First questions of the year. This one was from someone goes by the name Surfacebook on Reddit. And he had posted this this thing on Reddit where he said, I'd love an explanation of some of the bugs we get. Not that I'm complaining. I understand bugs are part of software development, but I'm an insider preview member. And with full knowledge of the risks, it's just I'm a programmer and a scientist, and I see bugs like apps that were closed, maximize, restart randomly. And it drives me crazy trying to figure out how such a thing gets triggered. What backend changes point to this. And it says, if it doesn't violate company policy, could we occasionally get an educational explanation of some of these interesting features? And by features, he means bugs.
So go over that specific problem again. It sounded like you're saying a maximized app that when closed will just randomly open on its own.
Yeah, I will read it exactly as he wrote it.
Okay.
I see a bug like, quote, apps that were closed, maximized, restart randomly, unquote.
So there, if we're talking about store apps, mm-hmm. and since he's on the insider build, there is features within the OS to pre-start applications in order to help performance.
Yeah.
That may be the thing that he's seeing, but I can't actually tell just based on that singular description. Mm-hmm. But for an app to automatically restart, there's only two cases for that, really, you know, two large cases. If it's a store app and we're trying to do a background start on it, sometimes the background start is visible. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a regular Win32 legacy application and it's just randomly restarting, then something is clearly triggering that, a scheduled task, some protocol that is initiating it, but we'd actually have to see what is the cause of that application being started. Now, the general way to figure that out is installing the debugger tools that mm-hmm. comes out of the WDK. Command in there, tlist-t, actually, which is the more useful command, displays, I don't know if I have debuggers on here. Oh, we do. tlist-t, for example. Okay. Oh, my goodness. This is a very, very small window. Let's make that bigger. No. Okay. So tlist-t from the debugger tools will tell you the exact tree of how the processes got created, which process created what. Mm-hmm. So the next time you notice, anyone notices, hey, this random window just popped up,
yeah.
you can run tlist and figure out exactly which process started it. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes what you'll find is that it came from service host. So for example, service host here created runtime broker, which created Edge. Service host will create essentially all of the modern apps.
Yeah.
All of the store apps. Service host will create other services. But ultimately, you know, you've got things like Explorer, which generally should be the one that is launching things. Mm-hmm. So you can use tlist-t to figure out which process was the one that initiated it. That'll give you some insight as to why it occurred. If it came from service host or a task host, that means it's coming from a service or a scheduled task. If it's coming from Explorer, that's a little bit more interesting. That means that it could be coming from the run key from the registry, yep. run once key, or from the startup group. And that could be, so if it's happening every time you log in, then obviously that's going to be one of the places. Mm-hmm. Or there's some other service out there. If you're in an IT environment, for example, you may have SCCM or some other management software that is triggering that application to open.
Yeah.
But those are the only cases that I currently know of for an app to randomly open without user initiation.
Okay. Any other weird bugs you've seen that had interesting causes or resolutions?
Oh goodness, there's no end to interesting bugs. I mean, we've had very interesting bugs with things like VirtualBox. For those on the Insider program, they may have seen VirtualBox, a pretty popular piece of software.
Yeah.
That Insider builds will cause VirtualBox to fail, mm-hmm. certain builds. And the biggest reason because of that is that VirtualBox takes dependencies on internal implementation details of the OS. Mm-hmm. And I mean implementation details. I mean they are literally walking memory, trying to read a structure that is undocumented. So they're trying to figure out what fields are at certain points, you know, relative offsets to other pieces of memory that are documented. So when things get changed around, you know, we evolve the OS, we add new members to a struct, and normally things just work. But when people take an internal dependency of saying, hey, this particular thing that I have reverse engineered has always lived off of this offset, and now we went and changed it because, hey, we're allowed to change it, VirtualBox breaks. This has happened repeatedly on a number of occasions. Thankfully, VirtualBox folks have been really, really good about working with us to get those dependencies removed. So now, oddly enough, with latest insider builds in VirtualBox, they should just work, and they should continue to work. You know, this particular bug they'll never hit again. Doesn't mean that they won't hit other bugs or that, you know, we will cause other issues to occur. But, you know, that was, that's an interesting one that I found. That we've recently resolved.
And it's a good example of how we work with our partners too. I mean, we did the same thing with CCleaner and stuff like that.
Right.
So we're always trying to help them and make a good
all of our customers are the same, right? Our customers are their customers, their customers are our customers. It's often very difficult to balance, you know, what we want to do in the platform versus what third parties are depending on, which is why we have to take such such a hard stance around what we document, what we support, and what we don't document and what we support. Because the moment that we document something means that we will support it. That is the behavior it's going to get. So when we don't document something, we do it very purposefully in that these are things that we need to be able to change that people can't depend on. Because if they try to take a dependency on it, then they will break, or the potential for breaking is much higher. And now everybody's unhappy.
All right, so Surfacebook, if you have any other specific bugs that you want us to dig into, let us know. We've got the bug wrangler extraordinaire right here. Next one from Ian. Ian? How do you pronounce that?
I'm going to say Ian.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think you should spell it because we could both be right.
I-A-I-N.
So and someone out there.
Let us know Ian.
Yes. Right, how do you pronounce it? Because I would say Ian. I could be wrong.
I just know I'm pronouncing it wrong. So I was wondering if you knew much about the Microsoft Surface Data Eraser tool. I'm particularly interested in how it wipes and if there's a recognized industry standard that it wipes to, and more importantly, if it's possible to generate a log file with details of the machine and the hard drive that was wiped.
I tried to take a look into this. I got absolutely zero response from any of my Surface folks. It might just be a really old tool that whomever used to own it no longer exists at the company. But there was no documentation that I could find on what, how it wiped, what it wiped. And if it did not have documentation on how to create a log file, then it probably doesn't exist. The tool is, well, if it doesn't say that it is for, you know, government standard, then don't assume that it is government standard.
So DoD does have some specific standards that they require. And I used to use Eraser, and Eraser had a few different ones that you could use. And a couple of them were, like, there's different DoD standards. But then the one that I talked to a security expert, Golnaz is in there yelling or something. I talked to a security expert once, and she told me what you really want to look for is a Gutman wipe. And so it does like 24-pass wipe, and it is what she says is the most secure. And she's like, you can use a, because apparently if you don't wipe things correctly or you use like the lowest end DoD, you can use a scanning tunnel electron microscope or something to read the edge of the platter and actually read the data that was wiped off there. That seems a little extreme, and I don't need that. But I still use, like, if I'm getting rid of my, you know, some tax form or something on a hard, old hard drive, that's what I end up using just because it was there.
Sure. I mean, you might as, it's better to be safe than sorry. Right? I don't know if I would ever necessarily go to that extreme. Although, to be fair, I don't know if I've ever thrown out a hard drive.
I haven't either. That's weird that you say that, because just over the weekend I was going through, I have a bin of hard drives. Mm-hmm. I've never thrown any away because I'm like, I should do something to destroy them mm-hmm. before I throw them away.
You know the best thing to destroy them?
Tell me.
Thermite.
See, this is why you would love Rick and Morty.
But I'm serious.
That's how Morty would get rid of it. Well, he'd shoot it with a laser, but yeah.
You notice I specified I've never thrown away a hard drive.
Yeah.
Does not mean I've never melted any okay. thermite.
All right. I understand. I get it now. But yeah, I'll have to bring some drives over and we'll thermite them.
So. Oh, it is very satisfying.
I bet.
It is extremely satisfying. You just got to make sure that you do it over concrete.
Okay. All right. We'll do that. It'll be fun. From Alex, hope you guys are doing well. Excited to write my first email of the Defragged Show. I tried to stop Rawlink Bluetooth adapter driver, System32 drivers, rtbth.sys, from administrative command prompt, but it was unsuccessful, and goes through some of the things, and wants to know what's the best way to do that.
So not all drivers can be stopped while you're in the running operating system. And even more so, they can't all be stopped by using a netstop command.
Yeah.
So one of the other approaches is to use the sc command that may or may not actually, there we go. You know, you can query a driver, you can set its state, you can set its state to off. But again, you'll have a, good possibility that if it didn't work with netstop, it may not work with SC either. And that's just the interface to the service control manager. Mm-hmm. So the only real way to do that is by going through the registry, HKLM, system, current control set, services, find your Rawlink BT driver. I don't know if I have a, what was his?
RTBTH.sys.
RTBTH. I don't know if I have a Rawlink in here. I do not. But these are where all of your services are listed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pick one. Set your start type as 4.
Yeah.
That marks it as disabled. Reboot the system, and then you're fine. You can do the same thing through safe mode, you mm-hmm. know, if your system isn't booting properly. Mm-hmm. But that's the best way to just stop the service, or if you set it to 4, it'll be disabled.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work through SC, or if it doesn't work through, obviously, services won't show your driver. So, here this will just show all of the services that were also part of the same listing in the regedit form, but this will just list the services. Even under the services key, under HKLM system current control set, that will show you the drivers, because services and drivers are very, yeah. very similar in how they get loaded.
Okay. Next question from Gavin. On a clean install of Windows 10, 14.393, I noticed that there's a default user 0 folder under the users folder. Two questions. One, why does this folder exist? And two, should I delete it?
So the folder exists for the upgrade into RS1, also known as 14.393. So what that user is for is to get through the UBI process, the out-of-box experience.
Yeah.
We create a user, log that user in during the UBI process in order to do some per-user setup that can't be done outside of that. We just need a user to do some work in. And then eventually that user will get cleaned up within, I think, 10 to 30 days. I can't exactly, they play around with the timeline every now and again. But eventually, if you run the disk cleanup wizard, that user and his folder should go away.
Okay.
You could delete it because it's not an active user, right? There's nothing there, but it's also no cause for concern, because it should be in a disabled state.
Okay. From Don, when I use Windows Explorer properties to remove properties and personal information, I get a message that the file's in use. What's the best way to remove properties and personal information from a file?
So I'm assuming that you're going here, properties, details. So here are a whole bunch of docs, remove properties and personal information. got two different options. You can create a copy with all possible properties removed, which means that you should never hit a file lock because you're creating a new file.
Yeah.
Or remove the properties directly from the file. Now, I've done this, and I have not had a problem with a file lock. So if you do have a file lock, the couple of things that you can do, it could be your virus scanner that is creating a file lock on it. If you have thumbnails in your Explorer window, let's see. Ah, here we go, preview pane. Yeah, the preview pane, that may be the thing that's keeping the lock on it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not the details pane.
Yeah.
But if you disable that, that may remove the lock. Some other third-party process, usually it's antivirus, it'll keep a lock on it.
Mm-hmm.
Could be the indexer, it's kind of unlikely if it persists.
Yeah.
But otherwise, create a copy of the file, then you can delete it and rename it back. That is your ultimate workaround.
Okay, cool. All right, last question here. When I press the volume button integrated on my keyboard, the on-screen volume indicator shown in the image below doesn't show up. I've been experiencing this problem since I upgraded to Windows 10 Anniversary Edition. How can I resolve this issue?
So
this is probably the volume slider that shows up on the upper left corner.
It's either ours, or it could also be many machines come with their own little widget.
That's true.
That puts on their own overlay for volume control.
Mm-hmm.
During previous OS upgrades, we have noticed that the volume control sometimes just breaks because there's a mismatch in the driver. So you have, remember, an audio card mm-hmm. with a driver. That little display volume thing is an executable that runs as part of the driver package, but also has a deep dependency on the actual driver.
Yeah.
So if what happens is that on a particular system, say it was on Windows 8.1, Windows 7, whatever, from an OEM, they bundle that machine with a particular driver, particular software, essentially never gets updated after mm-hmm. that point. Everything just works.
Yeah.
During the upgrade process, however, we find, due to compatibility reasons, hey, you need a new driver. Sometimes that driver, when it's pushed up onto Woo, does not necessarily have the backing executable that's also required. We call it a value add software or a partner software. It's not there, or it's the wrong version. You get a problem with the mismatch in versions, the executable doesn't work. Or we have simply removed that executable on the upgrade because we found there's a compatibility issue and it is not necessarily needed when you also have the OS overlay coming mm-hmm. up. So there's a number of reasons why the third-party one doesn't show. What you could do is remove all of the third-party audio driver software, go to the OEM website, specifically go to the OEM website, get the latest version of that driver, reinstall it brand new. You may get the overlay back, or the other possibility is they've actually detected that you're Windows 10. They know that you have the regular OS volume overlay.
Mm-hmm.
They disable showing their overlay.
Yeah.
A lot of different reasons why something looks different or acts different from what you previously knew to what you have here. OS could have changed. We could have forced a change on the third party, either through a shim, you know, what stuff that I do, or the third party itself could react differently because it knows something better.
Yeah. Okay. Pick of the week time. Pick of the week. So the main thing that I wanted to talk about today was there's a new external webcam that'll let you do Windows Hello. And this is awesome. I switched to a Surface Book specifically because of Windows Hello. It's so nice not having to log in. You just like flip the lid open, it looks at you, and you're on. That is the handiest thing in the world, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So this will let you do that on other desktops, laptops, whatever it is that you want to connect this thing to. So
I use Windows Hello not with the camera on my Surface Pro 4, but this particular type keyboard comes with a fingerprint scanner,
yeah,
which I personally love.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit faster than using Hello.
Yeah.
Or using the webcam anyways. Not a lot faster, just a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And using Hello is just so much easier.
Do you know of a third-party keyboard that has that fingerprint scanner?
I know.
Because I think that's what I'd like to use at home, because I don't keep a webcam hooked up on my desktop at home.
Right. There's lots of third-party fingerprint scanners that you can get that are separate. I don't know of any that are built into a keyboard specifically for a desktop.
$1 million idea, I give it to you for free. There you go.
I'm sure someone has designed one.
Yeah. All right. And then the other thing that I was going to mention real quick is Seth got a Razer Core. So it's a laptop. We talked about it on the show once before, but it's a laptop that's got an external box that'll let you hook up a external video card to. So you can have a really high-end desktop video card that will allow you to play games and all kinds of other stuff. He renders videos on it really fast. Works well. He had to tweak the drivers. He's using the latest Windows Insider preview. And that worked out well. And then the other thing that we talked about on a previous show is I finally, you know, broke down and I got Arrow for my house.
And you really like it.
Really like it. Really expensive, but it was worth it for me. So I had this use case where my router is on the complete opposite side of my house. And when I'm in my living room, I'm as far away from that router as I could possibly be. And there were times where I had to like hold my laptop up over my head to get a signal, and it was just a big pain in the butt. And so, I tried doing a couple of different access points and an extender, and that didn't work out so well.
I found that extenders really don't work very well.
So, you know, I got one of those Belkin ones that just plugs into the outlet, and then, you know, you use that. And a lot of times it didn't seem to work, and I'd have to unplug it and plug it back in, and then it'd work again for a while. This just always works, and it's got a nice phone app, so I can see how fast it's going. I can do a speed test from right here, right now. I can tell who's connected to it, how many devices I've got connected to it. I can push firmware updates to all of the devices. I got three of them, so they go in, you know, different places in your house and just makes a mesh network. And in November, right after I got it, they pushed an update that doubled the speed for it. So. It's very fast, but probably the most important thing about it, at least for me, is I connect from anywhere. I can go in the backyard. I can, you know, my phone is connected to my Wi-Fi when I'm driving down the road now for like the first block after my house. So very nice, very worth it. If you have a Wi-Fi issue at your house, that's probably going to take care of it.
See.
And there's a few other mesh Wi-Fi devices that are out on the market now as well.
I can definitely say that from an aesthetics point of view, I can see how this is attractive.
Yeah.
This one is the one that appeals to me.
Here he goes. Yeah.
From an aesthetics perspective.
If I needed to launch a rocket out of my backyard, yes, I would use that one. This is your overkill device of the year.
This is my overkill device of the year. I am so biased. I love Asus routers.
Yeah, that's what I was using one before.
I really, really love them. I fully, fully admit that I am biased because I've had Asus routers for years.
Yeah.
Practically every time they come up with a new one, it's like an Apple product for me, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, get the latest Asus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have this particular one. This is like, oh.
Yeah.
If I had a larger house, I'd probably get that one. I've got the model, I think, just before this one. And same idea. My house is very, 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 very small, so I don't have to worry about it. But
can
driving
also
down
use
the road,
it as
I can.
A weapon.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
You take this and it's like, rawr!
Yeah. The cool thing with the Arrow, too, that I really liked about it is you have three different devices. Each of them have a wired port on the back.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I put one in my wife's office. She has a desktop that didn't have, you know, a wireless card in it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was always kind of a pain in the butt, and I was using, like, you know, dongle things. But this, I just plug right in to the network, and you got a super fast wired network between the machines. And then the other one on the complete opposite side of the house is hooked up to a Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a wired connection on that that's really fast, too. Not that it would have been too much worse with wireless, but, you know, now it's wired, so that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is the show for this week. We will be off for a little bit because I got to go to Africa, China, and Australia And then we'll be back on.
Aren't you going to be
I'll be busy,
getting jet lagged?
But we might do another show before we leave. But if you have any questions or bugs or anything that you want to talk about, send us an email at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we will get back to you. See you next time.
Buy one of these.
Buy one of those. Buy one Intel Compute Stick.
Buy a couple of them. I mean, come on. They're this is practically a thumb drive, right?
There you go.
Palm drive.
Nice. See you next time.